sahanavavatu sahanau bhunaktu sahaviryankaravavahai tejasvinavatitamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, page 13. Kasyapa Muni continued, thinking, I promised to give her a benediction, and this promise cannot be violated, but Indra does not deserve to be killed. In these circumstances, the solution I have is quite suitable. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura elaborates, Tatare dam upakalpate means this is suitable. The meaning is this. I will teach her a Vaishnava austerity. When her heart becomes purified by that austerity, she will no longer have anger at Indra. Thus, she will not want to kill him. She will not kill Indra because the Vaishnava vow that she undertakes will not bestow evil results, even if she desires such results. However, the words of request in her prayer will be nullified, since Han can mean go as well as kill. She will have a son who will follow Indra instead of killing him, who will be a devata, not a demon. Because of the length of the vow, there will be certainly some irregularity in her performance. But by that vow, her mind will concentrate while she is unaware of it. Though there may be irregularity in the Vaishnava vow, the result will still be given. Her efforts will thus be successful, right? Because in the material vow, if there's any breakage in the vow, if it doesn't flow perfectly, you won't get the result, right? Because it's about how well you materially did it. But the Vaishnava vow means it's about doing something for Krishna. So therefore, that endeavor to please Krishna, that will give you the good result, right? So he's pointing here, because the vow will be longer, and for that, then she will be doing devotional service. She'll give up the, determination, you know, for killing Indra. While she's asking in her mind to kill Indra, but the same sutra will also mean someone who's a demigod, who's a follower of Indra, rather than someone who's a demon who will kill Indra, right? So that's why he says that this is very suitable, because it will actually accomplish what she wants by changing the consciousness that what she wants, she doesn't actually want anymore. Srila Prabhupada adds, this is the process of devotional service. Anyone can be purified by following the principles of devotional service in Krishna consciousness. For Krishna consciousness is so powerful that it can purify even the dirtiest class of men and transform them into the topmost Vaishnavas. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement aims at this purpose. Narottam Das Thakur says, Brajendra Nandana Jay, Sachi Suta Haila Se, Balarama Haila Nitai, Dina Hina Jato Chilo Hari Namer Udarilo, Tara Sakshi Jagai Madhai. The appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this Kali Yuga is especially meant to deliver the fallen souls. We're always planning something for material enjoyment. He gave the people of this age advantage of being able to chant the Hare Krishna mantra and thus become fully pure, free from all material contamination. Once one becomes a pure Vaishnava, he transcends all material conceptions of life. Thus, Kasyapa Muni tried to transform his wife into a Vaishnavi so that she might give up the idea of killing Indra, right? Because Jagai Madhai, there wasn't anything that they didn't do wrong. In fact, I had heard that they would even study Manu to see if there was some rule that they hadn't broken, you know, just for fun. They just wanted to make sure, you know, they got their checklist, right? Go down and, okay, we've done that one, yeah, like that. So they're the example, they're the, evidence, right, that this movement works. The chanting of Hari Nam will pick anyone up. So therefore, if one takes up this process, the devotional process, no matter who you are, you will be elevated. Right? Does that make sense? Because we have to look at it here. She is the mother of the demons. No? And so if she can be purified, why not everybody else? Right? He wanted both her and her sons to be purified so that they would be fit to become pure Vaishnavas. Of course, sometimes a practitioner deviates from the Vaishnava principles, and there's a chance that he may fall down. But Kashyapa Muni thought that even if one falls while practicing the Vaishnava principles, he is still not a loser. Even a fallen Vaishnava is eligible for better results, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Swalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayata. Even practicing the Vaishnava principles to a small extent can save one from the greatest danger of material existence. Thus, Kashyapa Muni planned to instruct his wife Diti to become a Vaishnava because he wanted to save the life of Indra. Plus, she would benefit from that. See, there's other vows, if you don't complete them, you get nothing. Vaishnava vow, you do anything on the path of Vaishnavism, you're benefited. Is that what it says?
Even if he's a fallen Vaishnava?
Even if he's fallen. No, in that case, then he's thrown out, you should throw him away in the trash, and there's absolutely no benefit, because unless he perfects it completely, he'll get nothing. Right? Means, anything performed in devotional service, that's eternal. That doesn't go away. Right? Does that make sense? So, it doesn't matter. If someone is chanting, thinking of Krishna, doing something like that, devotional, they always get benefit.
And when we have to talk about that person, it's better to talk about the good things that that person did.
Basically, because otherwise if you're talking about the bad, you can talk about them. If you're talking about them in a critical way, means not actually for benefit, just you're thinking that this is bad, then in one sense you do benefit them, because those bad qualities that they have, you get. And they're purified. So in other words, all the prajalpa talkers in the world, they're doing great service by purifying those that they're prajalpaing about. Now, the system works very like a charm, unless the person who's been criticized now criticizes them back, then they get those bad qualities back. You know, so then no one gets anywhere. But if one acts as a Vaishnava and someone else is not acting as a Vaishnava and they're criticizing, you get purified by that. That's why it appears that it's a curse, but actually it's a blessing, because you're getting purified. Devotional service is in another category. It's not like material. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Kashyapa Muni, thinking in this way, became somewhat angry. Condemning himself, O Maharaj Prikit, descendant of Kuru, he spoke to Diti as follows. Verses 45 to 55, Kashyapa Muni's stipulations. Kashyapa Muni said, My dear gentle wife, if you follow my instructions regarding this vow for at least 1 year, you will surely get a son who will be able to kill Indra. Right? Because using those words, one, it doesn't matter that she takes it meaning kill, but it can also mean a follower, right, like you said. So using those same words, then he can be indicating a follower, she's thinking it's kill. But even if he uses it in the terms of kill, by following the brother, she'll give up that determination. However, if you deviate from this vow of following the Vaishnava principles, you will get a son who will be favorable to Indra. Right? So then she'll say, no, I'll be determined and I'm going this way, like that. But either way, you know, so therefore she'll follow the vow. The vow itself, even though to follow it, she has to be more envious. But the point is by following it more strictly, she gets more purified. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out, the meaning desired by Diti was that she would get a son who would kill Indra and be a friend of the demons. Kashyapa meaning, however, was that she would get a son who would follow Indra and be a friend of the devatas. Diti replied, My dear Brahmana, I must accept your advice and follow the vow. Now let me understand what I have to do, what is forbidden, and what will not break the vow. Right? So in other words, what is to be done? That's the thing, because the vow has to be followed. But then it's also, what is forbidden? What would break the vow? And then, what are the things that won't break the vow? Because in your following, there's all kinds of different situations, so there may be something, you know, can you do this? Can you do that? Does that make sense? You know, okay, it's a codicil. Can we eat buckwheat? Okay. Can we eat buckwheat spaghetti? You know, can we eat buckwheat spaghetti with tomato sauce? Can we eat buckwheat with spaghetti with tomato sauce and Parmesan cheese? You know, it's just like that. That's why you have to know what doesn't break the vow. But you have to know what breaks the vow. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So then we could cook buckwheat noodles. Okay, could we cook buckwheat noodles with vegetables? Okay. Can we put soy sauce? No, that breaks the vow. You understand? So this is the reasons for this. Okay. Srila Prabhupada writes, "Oh, please clearly state all this to me." Srila Prabhupada writes, "As stated above, a woman is generally inclined to serve her own purposes. Kashyapa Muni proposed to train Diti to fulfill her desires within 1 year, and since she was eager to kill Indra, she immediately agreed, saying, 'Please let me know what the vow is and how I have to follow it. I promise that I shall do the needful and not break the vow.' This is another side of a woman's psychology. Even though a woman is very fond of fulfilling her own plans, when someone instructs her, especially her husband, she innocently follows, and thus she can be trained for better purposes." Right? So even when it's trying to fulfill one's own purpose, if the husband is trained, then the purpose that he'll be training her in, then will always be beneficial. So that determination to fulfill one's own desire, then being applied in Krishna consciousness, then becomes the determination that makes one Krishna conscious very quickly. That's the beauty of devotional service. It can't technically go wrong. "By nature, a woman wants to be a follower of a man. Therefore, if the man is good, the woman can be trained for a good purpose." Right? If the man's bad, then she ends up bad. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the principle, is that whoever's leading, then that's how the followers will end up. So it's a matter of how you're going to lead. Does that make sense? So the Vedic system of leading, then as we see, is if you want to actually control someone, you serve someone. So the husband's serving the wife, therefore the wife will serve the husband. And by that service, then they're both developing. Kashyapi Muni said, "My dear wife, to follow this vow, do not be violent or cause harm to anyone. Do not curse anyone. Do not speak lies. Do not cut your nails and hair, and do not touch impure things like skulls and bones." Srila Prabhupada comments, Kashyapa Muni's first instruction to his wife was not to be envious. The general tendency of anyone within this mature world is to be envious, and therefore, to become a Krishna conscious person, one must curb this tendency, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Paramo Nirmatsaranam, Srimad Bhagavatam 112. A Krishna conscious person is always non-envious, right? So that's what it's giving up. That's why all these Chala Dharmas, Vidharma, Adharma are all given up, right? Because otherwise, then, if we don't give those things up, then we'll tend to do things in these improper ways, right? Why would we practice these others? Because of envy, right? There's I am the controller. Because I'm the controller, therefore, I want to do things in a particular way, right? Rather than I should do things how I should do them, what is recommended, how we're supposed to do them. Does it make sense? So that idea that I'm the controller and therefore I'm the enjoyer has to be given up. Because if you don't give it up, then one will take the processes and one will use them in a cheating way. Does that make sense? So even though she may have been envious of Indra, she's working to try to give up that envy so that her actual envy will have fruit. You understand? She wants to kill Indra, but to kill him, to get the son that'll do it, she has to be non-envious, you know, during the process. Right?
Maybe she will forget after 2 years.
It's more about being purified. Women don't forget.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, it's just like this. If you want, ask your wife what you or she was wearing on the day you first met. she can tell you exactly. There's a good chance you don't remember, you know, anything. Yeah. A Krishna-conscious person is always non-envious, whereas others are always envious. Thus, Kashyapa Muni's instruction that his wife not be envious indicates that this is the first stage of advancement in Krishna consciousness. Kashyapa Muni desired to train his wife to be a Krishna-conscious person, for this would suffice to protect both her and Indra. Right? She'll develop, because if she remains envious, she won't develop nicely. And Indra will have a problem. She develops nicely, then she's protected and he's protected. So this is the first stage. Giving up that I am the controller, right? I'm Jiva, I'm the servant of the Lord. That's the first step. Kashyapa Muni continued, "My dear gentle wife, never enter the water while bathing. Never be angry and do not speak or associate with wicked people. Never wear clothes that have not been properly washed, and do not put on a garland that has already been worn. Never eat leftover food. Never eat prasad offered to the goddess Kali, Durga, and do not eat anything contaminated by flesh or fish. Do not eat anything brought or touched by a shudra, nor anything seen by a woman in her menstrual period. Do not drink water by joining your palms." Right? You only use one hand, right? You don't use two. After eating, you should not go out to the street without having washed your mouth, hands, and feet. Right? So this is not a new thing, not something that Prabhupada introduced. It's always been there. You should not go out in the evening or with your hair loose, nor should you go out unless you are properly decorated with ornaments. You should not leave the house unless you are very grave and are sufficiently covered. 48-50, Srila Prabhupada comments. Kashyapa Muni advised his wife not to go out into the street unless she was well decorated and well dressed. He did not encourage the miniskirts that have now become fashionable. In Oriental civilization, when a woman goes out onto the street, she must be fully covered so that no man will recognize who she is. All these methods are to be accepted for purification. If one takes to Krishna consciousness, one is fully purified, and thus one remains always transcendental to the contamination of the material world. So we're trying to purify ourselves of the material world. Acha? This is from? Oh, okay. Why not? Shah. Thank you. Okay, so that's the idea. If the girl goes out in the street, she's not recognized, then nobody unnecessarily deals with her. Because, you know, you don't want people dealing with you out on the street, right? Dealing should be in the home or a controlled environment, someplace that you know, not on the street, because that's, you don't know what's happening. That's why then they would go out, no one would know who they are, right? So makes sense. Like that. So they dress nicely, everything's proper, so they're very well presented. But at the same time, as people wouldn't necessarily know who they are. Those who need to know, but those who don't need to know, don't know. Yes. No, it means that you're not, in one sense, on a bathtub, because how do you get clean in the bathtub? You're in the dirty water, there's nothing to wash the dirty water off. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, after you take a bath, right, and you drain the water, right, what's the number one mistake generally kids and men make about the bathtub after they take a bath? And what, no, it means, like that means? The ring in the bathtub. Now, if the ring's on the bathtub, means it's like you have water, and there's stuff in the water, and it touches the bathtub, it leaves a ring. The other side is touching you. You understand? So, you know, in other words, taking a bath for, you know, the hot water, the medicinal benefit, this, that, and that, but as a regular way of taking a bath, that's not great. You know? Or it means that when you enter, you don't enter all the way into the water. You just are part way in the water, and then you dip yourself in. Because if you go all the way in the water, then you know, then how do you take a bath? How do you manage it? Because if you're all the way in, you can't really rub, do this and that. So you can't properly take a bath if you fully go in. You only go halfway in. Does that make sense? So it'd be more probably that, because they probably didn't have a lot of bathtubs back then. Right? Because they have rivers and lakes and like that, so they didn't worry about bathtubs. Okay. So all these things are for purification. Now the modern thing is, no, but we have our rights. Yeah, rights for what? Rights to remain impure. Okay, cool. Kasyapa continued. You should not lie down without having washed both your feet, or without being purified, nor with wet feet, or with your head pointed west or north. You should not lie naked, or with other women, or during the sunrise or sunset. Footnote 1. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out the verses 47 to 51 list the restrictive rules, and verse 52 begins the list of positive, right? So these have been all the negative. Why? To go to bed without your feet clean, because feet have been everywhere. Then that means the bed will be impure. That means then you won't sleep good, because it'll attract all kinds of negative influence. Does that make sense? That's the idea, is that one is pure there. Right? So, okay. Not with wet feet, because then you make the bed wet and then it's not going to be comfortable either. So you always wash your feet and dry them, then get into bed. Right? And, okay. Head pointed west or north. That one, because west you get sick, north you get the seeds of impersonalism enter the brain. So these two are avoided. So east for energy, south for, you know, calmness. So depending on what you need. If there's too much energy, sleep south. If you need to get energy, sleep east. Okay, you should not lie naked. Just in general, because then that's how you say. Especially for ladies, they're very careful about that, because at night all the ghosts and all that move around, and if the lady's naked, they generally come to have a look. So that's why the ladies will never, you know, go to sleep with nothing on. Right? Like in the tradition, they'll always sleep on this side. You know, with the cloth that'll cover. You know, even if it's a thin cloth, but it's just something, then they just keep going. But if, you know, you're laying on your back there and everything, it's a good view, then they'll drop by. And, you know, this is reality. And that means they'll disturb your sleep and then you won't sleep good. So if you go to sleep naked or any of these things, you won't sleep properly. And if you don't sleep properly, then the next day you're not at your best focus. So that's why they recommend it, so that your sleep is proper, so that then your day goes properly. Putting on washed clothing, okay, so now there's the positive, being always pure and being adorned with turmeric, sandalwood pulp, and other auspicious items, right? Because turmeric is that, kumkum is actually turmeric. You take turmeric and treat it, it becomes kumkum. So that's why it's so purifying. Because turmeric purifies, but, you know, then it's by treating, then it becomes red. So then you get the kumkumus. Sandalwood pulp and other auspicious items. Before breakfast, one should worship the cows, the Brahmins, the goddess of fortune, and the supreme personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada comments, if one is trained to honor and worship the cows and Brahmins, he is actually civilized. The worship of the supreme Lord is recommended, and the Lord is very fond of the cows and Brahmanas. Namo Brahmanya Devaya, go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. In other words, the civilization in which there's no respect for the cows and brahmanas is condemned. Right? One cannot become spiritually advanced without acquiring the brahminical qualifications and giving protection to cows. Cow protection ensures sufficient food prepared with milk, which is needed for an advanced civilization. So it's mentioning here, milk is needed for an advanced civilization. So you can either protect the cows and use the milk, which is for an advanced civilization, or you care about the cows and you don't use any dairy products. That's for a not advanced civilization. Does that make sense? Like that. The intent is to benefit the cows, but one is what's practiced by those who are advanced in civilization and those who are just, you know, politically inclined. Right? In other words, if you won't use any dairy products to protect the cow, that's political. You're not actually doing anything for the cows. So the advanced civilization, therefore, takes care of the cows and engages the products from the cows in the Lord's service. The other one, they're not engaging the cows, neither them, nor in God's service, nor nothing. So it's just a political stand. You know, nice political stand, but political nonetheless. Right? One should not pollute civilization by eating the flesh of cows. A civilization must do something progressive. And then it is an Aryan civilization. Instead of killing the cow to eat flesh, civilized men must prepare various milk products that will enhance the condition of society. Right? Because the milk products will develop the finer brain tissue, so you're actually developing society. If you don't take milk, it doesn't develop the finer brain tissues like that. If you chant, it'll also do that, so that's nice, but why not have both? We need all we can get. If one follows the Brahminical culture, he will become competent in Krishna consciousness. Kasyapa Muni continued, with flower garlands, sandalwood pulp, ornaments, and other paraphernalia, a woman following this vow should worship women who have sons and whose husbands are living. The pregnant wife should worship her husband and offer him prayers. She should meditate upon him, thinking that he is situated in her womb. Kasyapa Muni continued, right, because the son represents the father. Right. Because, does that make sense? Means, somebody comes along, plants a seed in the field, right? So then what'll grow, where does that come from? The person who planted the seed. Right? Does that make sense? So you plant an eggplant seed, what do you get? Eggplant, right? So that's the point. It's the person who planted the seed, that the living ant in the womb represents that person. Does that make sense? Kasyapa Muni continued, if you perform this ceremony called Pumsavana, adhering to the vow with faith for at least 1 year, you will give birth to a son destined to kill Indra. But if there is any discrepancy in the discharge of this vow, the son will be a friend of Indra. Right? Same wording, actually. That's the fun part. O King Parikit, Diti, the wife of Kasyapa, agreed to undergo the purificatory rite, purificatory process known as Pumsavana. Yes, she said, I shall do everything according to your instructions. With great jubilation, she became pregnant, having taken semen from Kasyapa, and faithfully began discharging the vow. 53 to 55. Yeah, you just have a yagya and you get yourself a demon. You don't need a year and all that.
And also about the same wording?
Yes. That's what you do. 56 to 68. Indra attempts to spoil Diti's vow and the Maruts appear. Sisugadeva Goswami continued, O king, who are respectful to everyone, Indra understood Diti's purpose, and thus he contrived to fulfill his own interests. Right? So everyone's just fulfilling their interests, right? The whole point is we should be trying to fulfill Krishna's interests. So this is about how people trying to fulfill their own interests, it never really works out. Or even if they get the results they want, it doesn't make them happy. Like Indra killed Dhritarasura, he wasn't happy. Right? So that's it. He killed Vishwarup, he wasn't happy. He insulted his guru, he wasn't happy. Right? So this is the right. Following the logic that self-preservation is the first law of nature, he wanted to break Diti's promise. Thus he engaged himself in the service of Diti, his aunt, who was residing in an ashram. Indra served his aunt daily by bringing flowers, fruits, roots, and wood for yajñas from the forest. He also brought kusa grass, leaves, sprouts, earth, and water exactly at the proper time. O King Parikit, as the hunter of a deer becomes like a deer, by covering his body with deerskin and serving the deer, so Indra, although at heart the enemy of the sons of Diti, became outwardly friendly and served Diti in a faithful way. Indra's purpose was to cheat Diti as soon as he could find some fault in the way she discharged the vows of the ritualistic ceremony. Right, because he's looking at it that he's performing a ritualistic ceremony, by that performance, then she'll get the results, rather than she's worshipping Vishnu. And it's by bhakti you'll get the results. So he's looking for a fault in the vow. Right, to take advantage, which on the material platform you can. But at the same time, because of the devotional service, then that's where the real result comes. However, he wanted to be undetected, and therefore he served her very carefully, right? She's doing all this vow to get someone who will kill Indra. Indra's coming and serving her, you know, to find if there's any fault, right? So both of them are performing their duties in an without being understood. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, Indra desired to find some fault in her vow. This, however, was his misconception, since whatever faults exist are nullified by remembering and glorifying Vishnu. Her vow should also become faultless, even if there was a fault. It is said, Yasya smritya cha namoktya tapo yagya kriyadishu nunam sapurnatam eti sadyo vande tam achutam. I offer my obeisances unto the infallible Lord, because simply by either remembering him or chanting his name, all penances, sacrifices, or fruit of activities become perfect. Skanda Purana. Mantratas tantratas chidram desha kala havastuta sarvakaroti nishchidram anushankirtanam tava. There may be discrepancies in pronouncing the mantras and observing the regulative principles because of discrepancies in regard of time, place, person, and paraphernalia. But when your name is chanted, everything becomes faultless. Right? So person and paraphernalia. So generally when they think of patra, they think it's paraphernalia. That's there, but it's actually the person, because depending on who the person is, they are able to use the paraphernalia or not. So if there's any fault in these, by remembering the Lord, chanting his glories, there is no fault. So therefore, Indra's looking for a fault, there actually isn't one. Right? Srimad Bhagavatam 8:23-16. It will be said later that Indra would not find any fault in her performance of vows. Mahapurusha Pujya Siddhi Kap Yanu Sangini. Liberation is the secondary result of worship of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:18-73. Jima means deception. The hunter disguises himself as a deer to cheat the deer. Similarly, Indra disguised himself as a devoted servant to cheat Diti. Srila Sugadeva Goswami continued, O master of the entire world, right? So now he's serving just for his own purpose, while she's worshiping the Lord. He could have also seen it from the purpose point of worshiping the Lord and gotten also the devotional benefit. So even though technically he feels he'll have cheated Diti by getting sons that wouldn't kill him but would be his assistants, technically he's cheated because he could have gotten some devotional service out of it. You know, same like with Ritrasura. He was victorious, but he lost. He won the battle, but lost the war. Yes.
The next devotion, it said that when you perform devotional service, there's an ulterior motive. It's called chalaka.
Yes.
And it brings some good result, not much.
No, but still enough to change the consciousness. So even if you're using chala dharma, then that's all right, but the point is you'll think you'll be following dharma. See, if you're following charma, if you're professing chala dharma, then that's the problem. In other words, you think the chala dharma is actually better than the standard, that's a problem. If you think what you're doing is standard, even though it's chala dharma, then that's another thing. Then one will be purified. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you're trying to follow, like let's say the devotees, they're trying to follow the Vedic system, right, in the earlier days. And on one sense, the essence of it, remembering the Lord, doing everything for the Lord, that was there. Now, the culture that would naturally be there in Vaishnav society, that may have been lacking. So now to rectify that, right, you have to get rid of the concept of pure devotional service, so therefore you can get rid of the Vedic, and therefore then we can use modern concepts of social, you know, status and everything like that. And by that, now we can solve the problem of culture, right? Because the Westerners are just so cultured. Right? So this is the problem. This is chala dharma. And many times just b-dharma, ad-dharma. So the whole point is they thought that they were following. though they didn't do a good job. So therefore, correct what's wrong. You don't, there's a cataract, take out the eye and throw it away. No, you remove the cataract. That's the smart thing.
So yes. In continuation, please take duty. She got more benefit because even though she followed this one, Chiryamurti, then Indra didn't follow anything that was just taken for.
Yes. Indra will get benefit, but that benefit's actually because of Kasyapa's arrangement, then arranged by Diti. But he'll be thinking it's his arrangement, it's actually not his arrangement at all. He's done nothing to get the benefit.
Can we say that his benefit is material?
Yes. Hers is his is material, and she is getting, you know, uplifted. She becomes a Vaishnava. Right? Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, O master of the entire world, when Indra could find no faults, he thought, how will there be good fortune for me? Right? You know, finding fault in Vaishnava Vrata, you know, then he's thinking he'll get benefit by that, right? Thus, he was full of deep anxiety. Having grown weak and thin because of strictly following the principles of the vow, Diti once unfortunately neglected to wash her mouth, hands and feet after eating and went to sleep during the evening twilight. Right, because you don't sleep in twilight because that's the impure time, you know, because all the subtle living entities move. Then if you're dirty, you haven't washed your hands, mouth, feet, then even more, like that, okay? Finding this fault, Indra, who has all the mystic powers, the yoga cities such as Anima and Lagima, entered Diti's womb while she was unconscious, being fast asleep. After entering Diti's womb, Indra, with the help of his thunderbolt, cut into 7 pieces her embryo, which appeared like glowing gold. In 7 places, 7 different living beings began crying. Indra told them, do not cry, and then he cut each of them into 7 pieces again. Right? So definitely the way to get rid of the crying, right? Okay. He also wouldn't be allowed in our society, right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, he said, do not cry, to comfort them. But then he cut them into 7 more parts each. Some say that a single jiva can expand his body into 49 forms for a short time, like a yogi, or like someone else enjoying a lot of piety and sin. Others say that knowing the future event, 49 jivas entered into one body, and then entered each of the 49 parts when cut by Indra. Others say that 48 more jivas entered each of the other parts the moment that Indra cut up the one fetus, just as separate jivas enter each branch when a person cuts branches off a creeper or bush and plants them in the ground. Right. So that being the last one that's mentioned, generally that's the one that they're all proper, but at the same time that's the one that the Acharya prefers. Right. Just like you have a champa tree, there's one soul, one jiva in that tree, but you break a branch off of, then it's just a branch, but he planted in the ground. Now, that can grow by the laws of nature. It can grow just from a branch. So another jiva will come in. So the jiva comes in, then it grows in that, and then you have a tree. The jiva doesn't come in, or it doesn't have the karma, then it doesn't happen, it dies. So he's saying is there was one soul in the fetus, then when he cut it into 7, then 7 more came in. When he's cut it again, then another, you know, came. Like that way you got 49. So in the cutting process, 48 more came, rather than all, you know, 49 of them crowded into one, and then, you know, when's this guy coming? And it's getting like this, you know. So. Sorry? The tip of the hair, still, you know, but, you know, how many people are you comfortable with in a room? Right? You know.
One.
Yes. And even that one you're not always so sure about, right? Okay. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, O King, being very much aggrieved, they pleaded to Indra with folded hands, saying, Dear Indra, we are the Maruts, your brothers. Why are you trying to kill us? When Indra saw that actually they were his devoted followers, he said to them, If you are all my brothers, you have nothing more to fear from me. Right? Because technically they're all in the womb together. So technically now Indra is also a son of Diti. Right? You know, it's just like Hanuman. There was that what was that? That one demoness. She wanted to try to swallow him. So then he just went into her mouth and then came out. And says, now that I come from your body, now I'm your son. Are you going to eat your son? You know, and, oh, okay, you know, then everything was good. Huh? Okay. Yeah, some.
I wonder if Vicky would like the idea.
Sorry?
Being the mother of...
That we'll see. Don't get too speculative at this point. Sukadeva Goswami said, my dear King Parikit, you are burned by the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama, but when Lord Krishna entered the womb of your mother, you were saved. Similarly, although the one embryo was cut into 49 pieces by the thunderbolt of Indra, they were all saved by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One worship because she's doing a vow to please the Lord. If one worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, even once, he receives the benefit of being promoted to the spiritual world and possessing the same bodily features as Vishnu. Diti worshipped Lord Vishnu for almost 1 year, adhering to a great vow. Because of such strength and spiritual life, the 49 Marus were born. How then is it wonderful that the Marus, although born from the womb of Diti, became equal to the demigods by the mercy of the Supreme Lord? Because of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Diti was completely purified. When she got up from bed, she saw her 49 sons along with Indra. These 49 sons were all as brilliant as fire and were in friendship with Indra, and therefore she was very pleased. 63 to 68. Because the problem is her sons before, Indra wasn't friendly with them, and so it was a problem. But now these ones, they're friends, and so in one sense, it's good. Right, because now she doesn't have to worry that Indra is going to arrange for these ones to be killed. Right? He already tried, it didn't work. Right? Verses 69 to 78, the reconciliation of Indra and Diti. Thereafter, Diti said to Indra, my dear son, I adhere to this difficult vow just to get a son to kill you 12 Adityas. I prayed for only one son, but now I see that there are 49. How has this happened? My dear son Indra, if you know, please tell me the truth. Do not try to speak lies. Right? So he's not necessarily known for, you know, in other words, he's known to be political. Indra replied, my dear mother, because I was grossly blinded by selfish interests, I lost sight of religion. When I understood that you were observing a great vow in spiritual life, I wanted to find some fault in you. When I found such a fault, I entered your womb and cut the embryo into pieces. Srila Prabhupada comments. When Diti, Indra's aunt, explained to Indra, without reservations, what she had wanted to do, Indra explained his intentions to her. Thus both of them, instead of being enemies, freely spoke the truth. This is the qualification that results from contact with Vishnu, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.8.12. Yas yasti bhaktir bhagavat yakinchana sarver gunais tatra samasate suraha. Right? So, in those days, he had something like this. It's very special, but it's about the relationship, so it ends there. Right? They reconcile, it's done. And others who no one's looking for it, but if it comes along, then they hear it nicely in Krishna consciousness. Right? Nowadays, you hear a juicy piece like this, it's just a matter of how many nanoseconds before you upload it on the internet. Like that. So it's not about relationships, it's about so-called truth. No, this is truth. Because it enhances the relationships. This other stuff is just gossip, like that. If one develops a devotional attitude and becomes purified by worshipping the Supreme Lord, all the good qualities are certainly manifested in his body. Because of being touched by worship of Vishnu, both Diti and Indra were purified. Lord Indra continued, first I cut the child in the womb into 7 pieces, which became 7 children. Then I cut each of the children into 7 pieces again. By the grace of the Supreme Lord, however, none of them died. My dear mother, when I saw that all 49 sons were alive, I was certainly struck with wonder. I decided that this was a secondary result of your having regularly executed devotional service in worship of Lord Vishnu. Right? It's not a primary, it's a secondary. She was taking it as a primary, but actually the primary is developing, you know, some, you know, becoming purified and developing some affection for the Lord. Secondary is then her sons were protected, even though she saw that as the main thing. Although those who are interested only in worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead do not desire anything material from the Lord and do not even want liberation, Lord Krishna fulfills all their desires. Footnote 2. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that these 2.5 verses, 73, 74, and half of 75, explain that liberation is the secondary result of worshipping Lord Krishna. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, Param means liberation. Those who desire liberation are ignorant of their own interests, desiring grass instead of the great treasure available. Because of the presence of the six great person qualities in the Lord present before them, those who desire worship of the Lord are considered successful. It is said, Satyam dishyar hitam artito narinam navar tado yat punar artita yata swayam vidatte bhajatam anichatam icha Pidhanam Nijapada Palavam. The Lord certainly gives desired objects to devotees who request them, but he does not give in such a way that the devotee will ask again after finishing his enjoyment. He gives his lotus feet, which include all desirables, to those worshippers who do not desire material benefits. So those who don't want a material benefit, they get actually the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, which includes all benefits. And Lord Indra continued, the ultimate goal of all ambition is to become a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If an intelligent man serves the most dear Lord who gives himself to his devotees, how can he desire material happiness, which is available even in hell? Srila Prabhupada comments, an intelligent man will never aspire to become a devotee to achieve material happiness. That is the test of the devotee. Right? He's not doing devotional service to get the benefits. Lord Indra concluded, O my mother, O best of all women, I am a fool. Kindly excuse me for whatever offenses I have committed. Your 49 sons have been born unhurt because of your devotional service. As an enemy, I cut them to pieces, but because of your great devotional service, they did not die. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, Diti was extremely satisfied by Indra's good behavior. Then Indra offered his respects to his aunt with profuse obeisances, and with her permission, he went away to the heavenly planets with his brothers, the Maruts. My dear King Parikit, I have replied as far as possible to the questions you have asked me, especially in regard to this pure, auspicious narration about the Maruts. Now you may inquire further, and I shall explain more. Right. So he's asked so many things up to now. And so so that ended, right? Remember before there was questions and there was a very long description, and then when that ended, then he says, now if there's anything more, then like that. So again, then all these things are there, questions have come up, but now they weren't finished, but now this narration is finished. Now he says, okay, now if there's anything more. Chapter 19, performing the Pumsavana ritualistic ceremony. This one ends. Okay. Pratigya. One should accept this Vishnu Vrata, which is a vow in devotional service, and should not deviate from its execution to engage in anything else. Right? So in other words, devotional service is just for devotional service. The Pratigya of this chapter is taken from verse 19. Chapter 18 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Parikit asked Sukadeva Goswami questions 619 of a question of Srimad Bhagavatam. Maharaj Parikit said, my dear Lord, you have already spoken about the Pumsavana vow. Now I want to hear about it in detail, for I understand that by observing this vow, one can please the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Sukadeva Goswami answers this question throughout the rest of this chapter. In the 19th Adhyaya Prakashika, in the 19th chapter on being asked by the king, Sukadeva describes in detail the Pumsavana vow, which destroys cruelty in the heart and pleases Vishnu. This chapter explains how Diti, Kasyapa Muni's wife, executed Kasyapa Muni's instructions on devotional service. During the first day of the bright fortnight of the moon in the month of Agrayana, November to December, every woman following in the footsteps of Diti and following the instructions of her own husband should begin this Pumsavana Vrata. In the morning, after washing her feet, bathing, and thus becoming purified, She should hear about the birth mystery of the Marus, then covering her body with a white dress and being properly ornamented. Before breakfast, she should worship Lord Vishnu and Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, Lord Vishnu's wife, by glorifying Lord Vishnu for his mercy, patience, prowess, ability, greatness, and other glories, and for how he can bestow all mystic benedictions. While offering the Lord all paraphernalia for worship, such as ornaments, a sacred thread, scents, nice flowers, incense, and water for bathing and washing his feet, hands, and mouth, one should invite the Lord with this mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Maha Purushaya Mahanubhavaya Maha Vibhuti Pataye Saha Maha Vibhutir Balim Upaharami. Then one should offer 12 oblations in the fire while chanting this mantra. Om Namo Bhagavate Maha Purushaya Maha Vibhuti Pataye Swaha. One should offer obeisances while chanting this mantra 10 times. Then one should chant the Lakshmi Narayan mantra. If either a pregnant woman or a husband regularly discharges this devotional service, both of them will receive the result. After continuing this process for one full year, the chaste wife should fast on the Purnima, the full moon day of Kartik. On the following day, the husband should worship the Lord as before and then observe a festival by cooking rice, nice food, and distributing prasad to the brahmanas. Then, with the permission of the brahmanas, the husband and wife should take prasad. This chapter ends by glorifying the results of the Pumsavana function. Right, so, I mean, in other words, the day after the Kartik Purnima, right? Because for the month ends on Purnima, right? So the day after that, so it's still the moon, you know, how you say it? Then one then starts this Vrata. So then 1 year later, you'll come through Kartik, and then on the Purnima, then you'll do this special, you know, activities and all that, and then you'll end the Vrata. That's the Shloka Anusharana. Summary verses 1-28, the explanation of the Pumsavana Vrata. Maharishi Parikshit said, My dear Lord, you have already spoken about the Pumsavana vow. Now I want to hear about it in detail, for I understand that by observing this vow one can please the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Verse 1. Sukadeva Goswami said, On the first day of the bright fortnight of the month of Agrayan, November-December, following the instructions of her husband, a woman should begin this regular devotional service with a vow of patience, for it can fulfill all one's desires. Before beginning the worship of Lord Vishnu, the woman should hear the story of how the Marus were born. Under the instructions of qualified brahmanas, in the morning she should wash her teeth, bathe, dress herself in white cloth and ornaments, and before taking breakfast, she should worship Lord Vishnu and Lakshmi. She should then pray to the Lord as follows. My dear Lord, you are full in all opulences, but I do not beg you for opulence. I simply offer my obeisances, respectful obeisances unto you. You are the husband and master of Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, who has all opulences. Therefore, you are the master of all mystic yoga. I simply offer my obeisances unto you. O my Lord, because you are endowed with causeless mercy, all opulences, all prowess, and all glory, strength, and transcendental qualities, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of everyone. Srila Prabhupada comments, Although he is full in himself, he nonetheless becomes pleased when his devotee offers him patram pushvam phalam toyam. Bhagavad Gita 9.26, a leaf, flower, fruit, or water, in devotion. Sometimes the Lord, as the child of a mother, of Mother Jashoda, requests his devotee for some food, as if he were very hungry. Sometimes he tells his devotee in a dream that his temple and his garden are now very old and they cannot enjoy them very nicely. Thus he requests the devotee to repair them. Sometimes he is buried in the earth, and as if unable to come out himself, he requests his devotee to rescue him. Sometimes he requests his devotees to preach his glories all over the world, although he alone is quite competent to perform this task. Even though the Supreme Personality of Godhead is endowed with all possessions and is self-sufficient, he depends on his devotees. Therefore, the relationship of the Lord with his devotees is extremely confidential. Only the devotee can perceive how the Lord, although full in himself, depends on his devotee for some particular work. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 11.33, where the Lord tells Arjuna, Nimiti matram bhava savyasachin. O Arjuna, merely be an instrument in the fight. Lord Krishna had the competence to win the battle of Kurukshetra, but nonetheless he induced his devotee Arjuna to fight and become the cause of victory. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is quite competent enough to spread his name and mission all over the world, but still he depended upon his devotee to do this work. Considering all these points, the most important aspect of the Supreme Lord's self-sufficiency is that he depends on his devotees. This is called his causeless mercy. The devotee who has perceived this causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by realization can understand the master and the servant. Yes, because that's the whole point. All these things are about the relationship with the Lord, right? And so his being dependent, that's his, the main, as Prabhupada points out, the main aspect of his self-sufficiency is his dependency upon the interaction with the Lord. So that's something very special. That's understood. Then you understand it's not just it'll happen, but we're given an opportunity to take part. You know, that's the nimitta matram. It's just being an instrument. Because Krishna can do it himself, but the point for rasa, then he depends on the devotees to do it, because then the interaction, the relationship, is there. You understand? So that's actually what's going on. If we just see, oh, Krishna and Arjuna, and so they're fighting, so therefore, you know, we should get out bows and arrows and go out and practice and stuff like that, and then we're like Krishna and Arjuna.
Form of the Lord would be a formal interaction, and it's not, we're not talking about
Bhagavan. No, yeah, it's always about
Bhagavan. It's just the
because you see here, he's talking about he's with Lakshmi, you know, he's a lord of all these different things like this, but it's all about him as a person. They're not saying, you know, that you're the greatest, you're the origin of everything, you're the maintainer, you're the destroyer. Then we're looking at the Paramahansa. You know, it means, in other words, God. Here we're looking at him. He's God. He's a person. So. After profusely offering obeisance unto Lord Vishnu, the devotee should offer respectful obeisances unto Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, and pray as follows. O wife of Lord Vishnu, O internal energy of Lord Vishnu, you are as good as Lord Vishnu himself, for you have all his qualities and opulences. O goddess of fortune, please be kind to me. O mother of the entire world, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Srila Prabhupada comments. Since Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, is the Lord's very precious potency, she is addressed here as Maha Maya. The word Maya means Shakti. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme, cannot exhibit his power everywhere without his principal energy. It is said, Shakti, Shaktiman, Abheda. The power and the powerful are identical. Therefore, Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, is the constant companion of Lord Vishnu. They remain together constantly. One cannot keep Lakshmi in one's home without Lord Vishnu. To think that one can do so is very dangerous. To keep Lakshmi or the riches of the Lord without the service of the Lord is always dangerous, for then Lakshmi becomes the illusory energy. With Lord Vishnu, however, Lakshmi is the spiritual energy. Right? So if everything's about Krishna, then one's dealing with the internal potency. If one's not, then it becomes dangerous. She becomes a Maya. Right? And in this way, then, you get distracted. The prayer continues. My Lord Vishnu, full in six opulences, you are the best of all enjoyers and the most powerful. O husband of Mother Lakshmi, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are accompanied by many associates, such as Vishvakshena. I offer all the paraphernalia for worshipping you. Footnote 3. Srila Prabhupada mentions, this mantra is very important. Anyone engaged in deity worship should chant this mantra as quoted above, beginning with Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya. No, such as Vishvakshena. Doesn't mean it specifically has to be. Because the point is we're worshiping the Lord. The point is he's the same person. When we're doing the worship, we're following the rules and all that, so it has that formal aspect. So basically, we're worshiping them as Lakshmi Narayan. Though it's Radha and Krishna. But the approach is in this form.
Can you say that we follow the rules of last human mind, but the means of the
environment? You could say that would be, yes, that's what we're trying to get to, but we tend to follow the rules of Lakshmi, Radha Krishna, but have the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. Yes, but that's generally intended.
One should chant this mantra every day with great attention, while worshipping Lord Vishnu with all paraphernalia, such as water for washing his feet, hands and mouth, and water for his bath. One should offer him various presentations for his worship, such as garments, a sacred thread, ornaments, scents, flowers, incense, and lamps. Sukadeva Goswami continued. After worshipping the Lord with all the paraphernalia mentioned above, one should chant the following mantra while offering 12 oblations of ghee on the sacred fire. Om Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya Mahavibhuti Pataye Swaha. One desires all opulence. His duty is to daily worship Lord Vishnu and his wife Lakshmi. With great devotion, one should worship him according to the above mentioned process. Lord Vishnu and the goddess of fortune are an immensely powerful combination. They are the bestowers of all benediction and the sources of all good fortune. Therefore, the duty of everyone is to worship Lakshmi Narayan. 7-9, Srila Prabhupada comments. Lakshmi Narayan, Lord Vishnu and Mother Lakshmi, are always situated in everyone's heart. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridayeshter Junatishtati, Bhagavad Gita 18:61. However, because non-devotees do not realize that Lord Vishnu stays with his eternal consort, Lakshmi, within the hearts of all living entities, they are not endowed with the opulence of Lord Vishnu. So they don't see, so they don't get. But he's always there. Even Paramatma is there. Lakshmi is there with him. It's just a matter of whether we're worshipping in a way that therefore is manifest as then Bhagavan. Otherwise, then it's Paramatma. Then whenever there's Vishnu, there's always Lakshmi's on his chest. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, one should offer obeisances unto the Lord with a mind humbled through devotion. While offering dandavats by falling on the ground like a rod, one should chant the above mantra 10 times. Then one should chant the following prayer. My Lord Vishnu and Mother Lakshmi, Goddess of Fortune, you are the proprietors of the entire creation. Indeed, you are the cause of the creation. Mother Lakshmi is extremely difficult to understand because she is so powerful that the jurisdiction of her power is difficult to overcome. Mother Lakshmi is represented in the material world as the external energy, but actually she is always the internal energy of the Lord. My Lord, you are the master of energy, and therefore you are the supreme person. You are the sacrifice, yajna personified. Right? So Lakshmi, she is the one who's actually doing everything. All the creation, everything is being done by her because the Lord does things through his energy. So she's the one who's doing. It's under his direction. So actually, we say it's Maya, but that's just her shadow. So it's actually her. She's doing everything. Right? But it's just the transformation in the form of her shadow in which she's doing everything. Yes? In one sense, yeah, but in a very simplified form, because it's meant for people to do at their homes and stuff like that. This is more simple. Yeah, but it's saying, all it is it's not mentioning the details of the 16 items, because it's just mentioning so that you understand the completeness. Because once it mentions Brahman thread, that means there must be a bath. You know, and that means then if you have a Brahman thread, you'll have the towel, you have the Achman, you'll do all those things. So it just means you understand the level that it's at. So that's already explained, because it doesn't have to be explained here. That's already in the Pancharatna text. All it is given here is what's the overall view of it, so that you know that you're following it the way that makes it specific for this ratha. But yes, it's just the Pancharatna system of worship. Can. Yeah, worship can always be done in the mind.
Or I would like to see if I don't have a Bible sometimes.
Everything's in the holy name. So if you just chant the holy name, you get all the benedictions. But if one has an interest to worship, you know, through the paraphernalia of the deity worship, then one can do that either externally or internally, like that. Because that's it. It's part of the nine processes. Hearing and chanting are the main, but archanam is also one of them. My Lord, you are the master of energy, and therefore you are the supreme person. You are sacrifice, yajna personified. Lakshmi, the embodiment of spiritual activities, is the original form of worship offered unto you, whereas you are the enjoyer of all sacrifices. So Lakshmi is the original worship. She is the worship. Right? Okay. Mother Lakshmi, who is here, is a reservoir of all spiritual qualities, whereas you manifest and enjoy all these qualities. Indeed, you are actually the enjoyer of everything. You live as the supersoul of all living entities, and the goddess of fortune is the form of their bodies, senses, and minds. She also has a holy name and form, whereas you are the support of all such names and forms, and the cause for the manifestation. Right? So as we said, he is the original principle. She is the forms and activities that manifest that. So in the spiritual world, that would be all the spiritual forms, right? As I mentioned in the Brahma Samhita, that all the gopis, they're all expansions of Radharani's form, right? But in the material world, then, because we're not interested in Krishna, still it's Vishnu and Lakshmi. So Vishnu's in the heart as Paramatma, Lakshmi is the body, the activities, the qualities, the paraphernalia, everything that's there, right? But the purpose of that, therefore, is to worship Narayan. Right? So it's not, oh no, but this is ours, and then Narayan is something else. No, it's Lakshmi. So it's actually meant to worship. But it's in the form of her external energy, her expansion. But it's actually her. So we see again, the material energy is meant for worshiping the Lord. Right? So now people who are unpurified, they don't understand this. They don't see how the Lord is there and how Lakshmi is there. So she has a whole name and form like that, but he's the support of all these names and forms. Right? So he's the original cause. He's the original cause. She's the formal cause. Right? So the original cause, he's what's the basis of everything. She's the formal cause, means what is the forms, the activities that are there by in principle. Right? Then when that comes to here, that becomes transferred across, where then the material cause is there. What happens in the living entity, then he thinks he's the one doing everything, when actually it's all coming from the Lord. So, yeah. That makes sense? Srila Prabhupada comments, Madhvacharya, the Acharya of the Tattvavadis, has described this verse in the following way. Vishnu is described by Yajna personified. And Mother Lakshmi is described as spiritual activities in the original form of worship. In fact, they represent spiritual activities and the supersoul of all yajna. Lord Vishnu is the supersoul, even of Lakshmi Devi, but no one can be the supersoul of Lord Vishnu. For Lord Vishnu himself is the spiritual supersoul of everyone. Right? So he is the yajna itself, but the activities that are done, that's Lakshmi. Right? Does that make sense? Means you have a yajna, that's Krishna. But the activities of the yajna, to perform the mood and all that, that's all Lakshmi. That's why we always behave nicely with the paraphernalia, respectful in what we do, because that's all Lakshmi. Does that make sense? Right? So they're non-different. One can say, what's the difference? But there is a difference. But there's no difference. Yes. Of course. But in this case, there's only one male enjoyer. According to Madhvacharya, there are two tattvas, or factors. One is independent and the other is dependent.
The first tattva is the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, and the second is the Jiva tattva. Lakshmi Devi, being dependent on Lord Vishnu, is sometimes counted among the Jivas. Right? She's not Jiva tattva in the way of she's 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. She's just called Jiva, meaning that she's dependent upon the Lord. Right? So sometimes, even amongst the Shris, there's a big controversy over what does this mean. Because one group will say she's non-different from Vishnu, and the other will say she's Jiva. Not meaning like us, but she's, you know, dependent. So, but the point is the Chinta Beta Tattva, they're both true. They're both the same thing. So it's surprising that it's created two different parties, that they think they're two opposite things. They're actually both part of the same thing.
Lakshmi Devi, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, however, have described Lakshmi Devi in accordance with the following two verses from the Prameya Ratnavali of Baladev Vidyabhushan. The first verse is quoted from the Vishnu Purana. Nityaiva sa jagan mata Vishno shrir anapayini yata saravagato Vishnus tataiveyam vijotama Vishno syu shaktayas tisras tasu ya kirtita para saiva shrish tad abhinneti praha shishyan prabhur mahan. O best of the Brahmanas, Lakshmi Ji is the constant companion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, and therefore she is called Anapayini. She is the mother of all creation. As Lord Vishnu is all-pervading, his spiritual potency, Mother Lakshmi, is also all-pervading. Lord Vishnu has three principal potencies, internal, external, and marginal. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has accepted Para Shakti, the spiritual energy of the Lord, as being identical with the Lord. Thus, she is also included in the independent Vishnu Tattva. Right? So when we're talking here of two, there's Vishnu and there's the Jiva, we'll counter on the other, on the side with Vishnu. Right? Not on our side. She is dependent, but she's not like us. Right? Because she's all-pervading. All the qualities that Krishna has, she is those qualities. So technically, you can't separate the two. Though, you can tell the difference. Yes?
Can you say that she's Shakti? Shakti is a separate tattva?
No, but that's the Shakti tattva. But what we're saying is here, when we're talking about two, the Lord and those who are dependent, then they'll count Lakshmi as dependent. We'll count her in the sight of the Lord. And just ourselves, we're dependent. It's just in how you're putting it. Because all these things are there. Because otherwise, why is Panchatattva? Why are there five? Why are there five?
In the Kanti Mala commentary on the Prameya Ratnavali, there is this statement: Nanu Kvachit Nitya Mukta Jivatvam Lakshmya Svikritam Tatraha praheti nityaiveti padye sarva vyapti katanena kala kashchet yadhi padya dvaye shudho pityukta cha mahaprabhuna svashishyan prat lakshmya bhagavad advaityam upadisham kachit yat Tasyas tu dvaitam uktam tattu tad avisha nitya mukta jivam adyaya sangamas tu. No, sangatamas tu. Quote, although some authoritative Vaishnava disciplic successions count the goddess of fortune among the ever liberated living entities, Jivas and Vaikuntha, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in accordance with the statement in the Vishnu Purana, has described Lakshmi as being identical with the Vishnu Tattva. The correct conclusion is that the description of Lakshmi as being different from Vishnu are stated when an eternally liberated living entity is imbued with the quality of Lakshmi. They do not pertain to Mother Lakshmi, the eternal consort of Lord Vishnu.
Right, so in other words, since she is the manifestation of everything, so when you're counting her as separate or as Jiva, then we're meaning that the living entities, their forms and their activities are actually Lakshmi. So in this way, then she is separate as Jiva. Does this make sense? So in other words, we count it because the Lord and His energies are non-different. Achinta, Veda, Veda, Tattva. Right? But we're the separated energy. Right? She's not. She's not separated energy. So that's why we can work under her directly or under her shadow. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So she, in that way, is counted in this thing about independent and dependent. When you're just having two, she's in the independent. Right? But in her independence, she's always dependent upon the Lord. But she's in that category. Because the Lord, He does everything independently. He does it through His own energy. So the energies are there. They're not somewhere else. And then He has to do it on His own. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. The prayer concludes, "You are both the supreme rulers and benedictors of the three worlds. Therefore, my Lord, Uttama Shloka, may my ambitions be fulfilled by your grace." Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Thus one should worship Lord Vishnu, who is known as Srinivasa, along with Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, by offering prayers according to the process mentioned above." Right? So we see this Achinta Beta Beta Tattva is the Vedic philosophy. But just in Kali Yuga, it gets brought out later of all of them. In other words, Achinta Beta Beta Tattva includes all the other schools, right? So therefore it comes later as the conclusion when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes. Right? So all of the four, they're all correct, but it's just that Achinta Beta Beta Tattva includes all the aspects. So any one of them can take you back to Godhead. But this will then bring it to a particular aspect of the highest level. The others will get you to Vaikuntha, they'll get you to lower Goloka, but they won't get you to Braj. Only Achinta Beta Beta Tattva will get you to Braj. After removing all the paraphernalia of worship, one should offer them water to wash their hands and mouths, and then one should worship them again. Thereafter, with devotion and humility, Hashtamukha Prakshalanam Jalam. Thereafter, with devotion and humility, one should offer prayers to the Lord and Mother Lakshmi. Then one should smell the remnants of the food offered. Right, so therefore, you've done all the different things. You've done your Atma Samarpana and Karma Samarpana and everything like that. So it's the full, it's the regular standard Pancharatri system. So we can see is that these are being given before. So this would be Vedic. So if you take out just this part, that's called agama, that which has come from. That's called the Pancharatra. So Narad Muni, in discussing the essence of worship of Vishnu, then that essence is Pancharatra. Yeah, that's agama. So it's not a separate thing. It'd be like you make a study in a particular aspect of the Veda. That's Pancharatra. Right? That's why it's called agama. Yes. But you see, is the system is the same. This is, you know, this goes back to the beginning of the universe. And so the process is the same. So we're just doing the same things. So therefore, there's no clash between the Pancharatric, the Vedic, the various different Pancharatra Samhitas, all this and that. Sometimes, but this is here and that was there, and then what do we do like that? The essential points are there. What's the Acharyas give? Follow that. Does that make sense? It's not a big deal, right? Then one should should smell the remnants of the food offered, and then again worship the Lord and Lakshmiji, accepting her husband as the representative of the Supreme Person. A wife should worship him with unalloyed devotion by offering him prasad. The husband, being very pleased with his wife, should engage himself in the affairs of his family. Srila Prabhupada comments, "The family relationship of husband and wife should be established spiritually according to the process mentioned above." So it's all based around the deity. Right? It's all based around the deity worship. Right? So he's seeing, she's worshiping the Lord, he's worshiping the Lord, she's seeing him as a representative of the Lord. Therefore, then he's taking care of everything that needs to be taken care of. That means all the relationships, because it says the family affairs, right? The affairs of the family. That doesn't just mean you paid the bills. Right? If you just have to sit down with the checkbook and pay the bills, the wife could do that. You know what I'm saying? In fact, technically in the Vedic thing, she does do that. Right? So the whole point is, it's about the interaction with everybody in the family and seeing that that's all going. Everybody, you know, the mood is right. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, between the husband and wife, one person is sufficient to execute this devotional service. Because of their good relationship, both of them will enjoy the result, right? So if it's a bad relationship, then it may not get transferred as well. But if it's a good relationship, naturally the other one gets the benefit. Therefore, if the wife is unable to execute this process, the husband should carefully do so, and the faithful wife will share the result. One should accept this Vishnu Vrata, which is a vow in devotional service, and should not deviate from its execution to engage in anything else. By offering the remnants of prasad, flower garlands, sandalwood pulp, and ornaments, one should daily worship the brahmanas and worship women who peacefully live with their husbands and children. Every day the wife must continue following. So in other words, women who are in this position also, they should be respected and properly dealt with. Right? So that's another part of the Vedic culture, is that women who are properly situated, they're respected, dealt with nicely, like this. Naturally then it's inspiring to be in this position. But if you're doing all these things and nobody cares, then, you know, then it's going to be, you know, then the 50-50 mantra will be chanted, which, as we pointed out, actually means 90-10. Okay. In other words, you're going to get 90-10 with affection or 90-10 with in your face. So, take your pick. Right? Every day, the wife must continue following the regular principles to worship Lord Vishnu with great devotion. Thereafter, Lord Vishnu should be laid in his bed, and then one should take prasad. In this way, husband and wife will be purified, will have had all their desires fulfilled. Right? So, laid in his bed means if you're just doing a worship where you take the shaligram out of the deity, just the worship is just done, that's it, and then he's put back in his box or back in like that. Or, it can mean that It's called Paryankasana. It means it's just for resting. So like during the day, technically, the Lord is on Paryankasana. At night, when he goes to sleep, fully in bed, then that's Shayanasana. So if you're doing the full day, the 64 items, then you'll have the two. But if you're just doing the worship in the morning, then generally the worship's done and that's kind of it. Does that make sense? But the point is after it's finished, everything's been done, the Lord is now resting, then you'll go and take prasad, because all the duties are done. That doesn't mean that you worship all day and at night when he goes to bed at 10 o'clock, then only eat. It means you could do if you want, but that's not what it means. Because it says before breakfast, you do this worship. So traditionally, breakfast is not at 10 o'clock at night. Also, it must be pointed out, because if the wife is doing that, that means she's the one respecting these other women who are nicely situated in family life. Right? Rather than being envious, she's respecting them. All right? And if she does that, they'll respect her. In this way, husband and wife will be purified and will have all their desires fulfilled. The chaste wife must perform such devotional service continuously for 1 year. After 1 year passes, she should fast on the full moon day in the month of Kartik, October, November. Right. It also, yeah. Footnote 4. His Holiness Bhanu Swami points out, since the vow starts after the dark moon of the following month, Margashirsha, during the waxing phase of the moon, and the vow ends on the full moon of Kartik month, the vow does not last a full year, but would be 2 weeks short. Only in the case of adding an extra Purushottam month would there be over a full year's vow. Right? So you're starting from when the moon goes up, from the dark moon, from the Pratipada, the dark moon, that's when you start, when it's going. That's 2 weeks after the full moon of Kartik. But basically it's 1 year. It's 50 weeks instead of 52. Right? But just in case someone goes, hey, but it's not a year, then this explanation is there. On the morning of the next day, one should wash oneself, and after worshipping Lord Krishna as before, one should cook, as one cooks for festivals, as stated in the Griha Sutras.
Sweet rice. Sweet rice should be cooked with ghee, and with this preparation, the husband should offer oblations to the fire 12 times. Thereafter, he should satisfy the brahmanas. When the satisfied brahmanas bestow their blessings, he should devoutly offer them respectful obeisances with his head, and with their permission, he should take the shod. Right? So, he's finished all the worship. Now he takes care of the guests and everything like that. Then he'll take the shot. Right? Before taking his meal, the husband must first sit the acharya comfortably, and along with his relatives and friends should control his speech and offer prasad to the guru. Then the wife should eat the remnants of the oblation of sweet rice cooked with ghee. Eating the remnants ensures a learned, devoted son and all good fortune. If this vow or ritualistic ceremony is observed according to the prescription of Shastra, even in this life a man will be able to achieve all the benedictions he desires from the Lord. A wife who performs this ritualistic ceremony will surely receive good fortune, opulence, sons, a long-living husband, a good reputation, and a good home. Yes. Yes, though I've heard people have a system where they do it in 12 days, but...
This is before the conception or during the conception, because this is during the conception.
Yes. So it appears that you might... Or you just do this vow, and then, you know, the point is you do this vow, all these nice things will happen. Now, you notice that here's that when she eats that sweet rice, you know, that's been used for the yajna. The oblation, so he eats that. And so it mentions that she, basically you get the idea she eats that. One, she's going to eat that, but you get the idea she eats that first, because that's what the whole thing's about. And then having eaten the sweets, then you eat the salties. Right? Because otherwise, if you eat all the salties, you may not be interested in the sweet. It's about this one, eat the sweet. Then you're going to worry about the other things.
Srila Prabhupada comments. In Bengal, even today, if a woman lives for a long time with her husband, she is considered very fortunate. A woman generally desires a good husband, good children, a good home, prosperity, opulence, and so on. Right? You just mean, even though that's everything, you put in and so on just to make sure. Right? As recommended in this verse, a woman will receive all these desirable benedictions, and a man will also be able to receive all benedictions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, by performing this particular type of brata, a man and woman in Krishna consciousness will be happy in the material world. Because of being Krishna conscious, they will be promoted to the spiritual world. Right? It's about going back to Godhead, but you'll be happy here because everything goes nicely. But it's not about being happy here, it's about being Krishna conscious. Srila Sukadeva Goswami concluded, if an unmarried girl observes this brata, so that would mean not pregnant, right? She will be able to get a very good husband, right? If a woman who is avira, who has no husband or son, executes this ritualistic ceremony, she can be promoted to the spiritual world. Right? So that answers your question before. Right? A woman whose children have died after birth can get a child with a long duration of life and also become very fortunate in possessing wealth. If a woman is unfortunate, she will become fortunate. If ugly, she will become beautiful. By observe, because beauty is about the mood, not about actually what you look like. By observing this brata, a diseased man can gain relief from his disease and have an able body with which to work. If one recites this narration while offering oblations to the pitas and demigods, especially during the Shraddha ceremony, the demigods and inhabitants of Pitruloka will be extremely pleased with him and bestow upon him the fulfillment of all desires. Right? In other words, if you're doing your Pitri worship and all that, as that's part of your nitya kriyas, that you do it in this fashion, right, the Pitris will actually be more pleased because you're worshipping the original Pitri, Lord Vishnu, from whom they're from. They'll be more pleased. Plus, of all the offerings to make to the forefathers, an offering of sweet rice is the best. So you've done this worship, and then that sweet rice that you offered to Lord Vishnu, you offer that to the Pitris, it's not going to get better than that. Yes.
Can you say that this last paragraph must be
No, it's just saying what will happen. It's not that you have to want this. It's just saying this is what happens.
But
then, like Diti, she started with worse than this mentality.
You'll get to the mentality. Because the point is you're going to do this nicely. Because it means all the stuff was before, not that you just worship the deity and kind of work it in. It means that's the main thing that you do in the morning. You get up, you do all these things nicely, you observe all those things. You know, you wash your hands, mouth, and feet after you've been in the bathroom. Right there, that's going to be something serious. That's another thing, but they're just saying the point is that the point is always be worshiping Lord Vishnu. That's the actual point. But in here, then one will be very strict about it. But if you just worship the Lord very, very sincerely and strictly, everything will work. After one, so in other words, if one is on these mixed devotional service or even lower, by performing this, then he'll get all benefit. So we're just pointing out how powerful it is. You know, just like chanting the holy name, even if the chandala chants, then it becomes purified. Yeah. After one performs this ritualistic ceremony, Lord Vishnu and his wife, Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, are very pleased with him. O King Pariket, now I have completely described how Diti performed the ceremony and had good children, the Maruts, and a happy life. I have tried to explain this to you as elaborately as possible. 26 to 28. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wraps up this canto thusly, because this is the end of the canto. The commentary Sardartha Darshani on 19th chapter of the 6th canto has been completed to give pleasure to the hearts of the devotees in accordance with the views of the Acharyas. The devotees, flowing with mercy, continuously chanting the names of Krishna, should tolerate my chattering. Though I am approaching death, having been destroyed by fever from the three doshas, I have completed the commentary on the 6th canto on the 9th lunar day of the waxing moon of Vaishak month, on Wednesday, at the base of a desire tree moist with drops of water from the waves of the shining Jamuna River. Vaishak month. We're in Vaishak now? Or we just... You don't know? Yes, it's during Vaishak, so I still think we're like that. Or we're close. In other words, he finished the canto, writing it, his commentary here, and we finished here also. So, yes. So, amazingly enough, yes, it happened. Yes. Especially our Zoom mice. No, I don't know about there is a brata I hear about it. Someone was talking about it to do Kumisavana brata, so there seems to be an explanation of how to do this in a 12-day brata. No, he was talking about the full year brata, what he said that an unmarried girl does, then she'll get, you know, good husband, kids, everything will come nicely. If she's married, then everything will work out. You know, basically it means by worshiping Vishnu, then it doesn't get better than that. That's the name. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.